Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Hello, everybody. It's Barack and Michelle.
Election day is almost here, and people are getting fired up.
And we need you to stay fired up all the way to November 2nd.
This year's elections are just too important to sit out because there's so much at stake right now for our future and for our children's future. Each of you can make a difference, and we've seen it before. We know we can do it again.
All across the country, volunteers are getting ready for the final days before the election. There's no more important time to be out there knocking on doors, making phone calls, and helping voters get to the polls. And we're asking supporters like you to sign up now for volunteer shifts on election weekend.
Now's the time to make plans, not just to vote, but to help get out the vote.
This election isn't just about one vote or one party. It's about your future. It's time to get out there and shape it. It's time to get out there and fight for it. Because if you do,
All right. Thank you very much. Enough. I can't even listen to it. I never heard such a production like this. You'd think he was in talk radio, not the president of the most powerful country on earth. Moreover, I mean, where's the fire in the belly? I hear ice cream in the belly. I don't hear fire in the belly. I hear melted vanilla in the belly. Something's wrong with this picture. They don't really sound like they're too enthusiastic, do they? So we read today that George Soros, the hedge fund and money manipulator, gave $1 million to the communist smear group Media Matters. And what you got to understand is this. The NAACP today also came out saying that people who don't want higher taxes and bigger government are racist. And Media Matters admits that it's funded to $1 million by George Soros, who was convicted for insider trading. And Barack Obama goes on a comedy show hosted by a man who claims to have a crush on him. So let's talk about Obama and the comedian for a minute. It was announced yesterday that Obama would appear on the TV program of a comedian. A comedian, by the way, who went off the air when the comedy writers went on strike, a man who reads only scripts. The very next day, it's announced The Trickle of Poverty by Michael Savage moved up one other place in overall book sales, up to number two. And by going on the comedian show, Obama is only preaching to the choir. Remember, 99% of those watching MTV would have either voted for him or not voted at all. So why is he going on this show? Does he have an ulterior motive for appearing on the comedian show? Is Obama trying to get votes? I guess. But is he also trying to push the comedian's book in order to prevent Michael Savage's book from hitting the number one slot? And that leads me to the next question. What information have you found in Trickle Up Poverty that Obama desperately wants to keep from going out to the mainstream of America? Have you found anything in Trickle Up Poverty that you think Obama wants to block from the general public in this country? Why else would he go on the comedian show? Sure, to get votes, but they're going to vote for him anyway if they vote at all. But there's some other motive for him going on the comedian show. How would you send the message to Obama, to the comedian, and to their leftist fellow travelers, I ask you today? Would you commit to knocking the comedian off the top spot in book sales by buying Trickle Up Poverty today or tomorrow? This is the critical week. I went from 3 to 2. If I don't make it to number one this week, it's over. Do you think that, by the way, this has nothing to do with my book, but in general, do you think that book sales are becoming an indicator of the election results themselves? There's something going on here, boys and girls in the Savage Nation. Now let's turn to Nancy Pelosi, because she's always good for comic relief. Here is Nancy Pelosi, perhaps the wealthiest woman in Congress, talking about the disparity in income in America. Listen to clip 5.
We're talking about addressing the disparity in our country of income, where the wealthy people continue to get wealthier and some other people are falling out of the middle class, when we want to bring many more people into the middle class. But that disparity is not just about wages alone. That disparity is about ownership and equity.
And then
it's
give me Mussolini.
All about fairness in our country.
Grandi quando dominammo il mare. Roma non poteva arrivare all'impero prima di aver schiacciato la potenza marittima di Cartagine.
Arrivederci Roma. Arrivederci Roma. Pelosi favorability rating hits new low. Now, of course, this is not a story that's shocking, but House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's favorability rating has plummeted to a new trough. It has gone down to 29% from 36%, according to the latest, and it's dropping. But what's interesting is Pelosi has almost matched the lowest favorability rating that Republican Newt Gingrich received as Speaker at 24% in 1997, but she soon may break it. See, I'm a very fair guy. I got to remind you that Gingrich was not that popular either for some reason. But Pelosi's image, according to Gallup official, has gone from bad to worse in recent months, with independents in particular growing more critical of her. There's other things I could say, but this is a family show. 1-800-449-8255. Not a caller in sight? Though I see red lights, but there's no callers. Why not? Oh, you haven't put them up yet? I'm not in the mood to even talk about politics. There's something wrong today. I'm not that focused on politics. My mind is distracted. What can we talk about other than politics? Is there anything out there other than politics? Anybody want to talk about anything other than politics? Is there anything for fun? No books, no politics, anything. You're going to have a break now. We're giving you a hiatus. It's only 12 minutes after the hour, and I'm going to give you a chance to have a hiatus from politics. As long as you don't get a hiatal hernia thinking about it, call me at 1-800-449-825. Is it time for me to go to my dreaded website and read the stories that we've... I'm not even in the mood for that. I think I had too much Chinese last night and too much Japanese. It's enough already with the Asian food. I can, maybe it's the salt threw me off. I don't really know. My mind is not focused. I'm so bored of the election right now that I don't... Can we talk about something else? Stories, family stories... Childhood stories, what life was like when America was great, when the chrome was thick and the women were straight, something. Anything other than politics. I'll give you a 2-minute window as I go to Mozilla Firefox and try to get reconnecting out there. Interesting. So Obama speaks to teenagers in high schools and then gives them free ice cream. And then he goes on to the Jester Show. What is that all about? What is that all about? I don't know what you want to talk about in the Savage Nation. It's so boring. I spoke to a guy today in politics, someone I know for many years, and he told me that the people who are lifetime politicians, there's something wrong with all of them. He knows many of them. He said, he said anyone who has a career, is a career politician, he said there's something basically wrong with them. He said, who else would want that job? No, we don't know that. You feel the lull. Do you feel the lull? Because I feel a lull. You feel a lull. Do you feel yourself getting drifting around now? Because I'm drifting around. I'll go to the callers. Go ahead, Leslie in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Leslie calling. I just wanted to let you know that I'm 52 years old, and life is so different now than it was when I was a little
girl. Of course, nothing remains the same, but you wouldn't expect it to remain the same, so let's not say that it would. Your life was different when your parents were alive, so you'd expect it to change. The issue is not change. The issue is how it has changed and what direction we're going in. See, not all change is bad, but not all change is positive either.
Absolutely. But let me add, Michael, that I finally got your book. My father bought it for me the other day at Barnes & Noble in Freehold, New Jersey, and it wasn't out. It was in the stock room. He had to ask the lady.
Oh, my God. She hid it in Barnes & Noble.
Yes.
Well, that's terrible. All right. Well, don't worry about it. As long as you're enjoying it. Like my mother used to say, as long as you're enjoying yourself. I don't know if she shined us on or what. Mom, poor mom. May she rest in peace. Whatever you'd say to her, she would say to you, as long as you're enjoying yourself. You could say, Ma, listen, I'm calling. I just had an auto wreck. That's okay, as long as you're enjoying yourself. She always had a standard remark. Maybe I should use that with my callers because I'm in a space cadet mood. I think I ate too late. I ate too much. I said salmon teriyaki, no sauce. And then I said chicken teriyaki, no sauce. He put sauce in the chicken, and I think the sugar got me, and I have a slight hypoglycemia job right now. I tried the tea. I'm waiting for the end of the show so I can get my... Do you know what the best news is why I'm feeling good? You want to hear the God's honest truth why I'm feeling like I can sit on a... Let's say, not a peak. I'm not on a peak. I'm on a plateau. Because I beat corned beef. I pushed corned beef to number 3. I mean, this is one of the most delightful moments of my adult career. For me to take a man, the giant, the green giant, the jolly green giant, and push him down to number 3... When the jolly green giant has gone on virtually every show on television to push his pathetic rag of a book that has virtually nothing in it that you haven't read before, and I push him back to number 3 is amazing to me. It's a wonderful feeling to have a small show the way I do with only 8 to 10 million listeners and see that you're so loyal that you'll go out and push corned beef down into number 3. We have only one slot to go, and then I can rest easily. We have to push the comedian out of the slot. And you cannot let Obama keep the comedian at number 1 because it's telling America that the comedian is, you know, that he writes what people want to know. That's bull crap. Okay, what do you want to talk about? Let's go to New York City. Odalis, welcome to the show. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I was born in Cuba. Unfortunately, I couldn't come to this country early enough when I...
Hasta la victoria siempre, said the bearded one.
Yes, I was 5 years old, and in school, they forced us to say that we were communists, and I didn't understand that.
Did they give you ice cream? Did they give you ice cream after you said you were a communist?
You know what my kindergarten teacher told me?
What?
You want bonbons, you want chocolate, you have to go to America. And I...
Oh, my. In other words, there were no bonbons there except for Fidel. He had plenty of bonbons, didn't he?
Yes, for himself, only for himself.
All the señoritas were the bonbons. Any one bonbon he wanted, he got.
Yeah, of course. And you know what he also does? That I found out with a person that was a translator. I studied English in Cuba. He went to Ethiopia, this person, and he said, you know what your president loves? He sends a plane directly from Cuba for the special fish that he loves, while the people in Cuba are starving every single day.
He sent an airplane from Cuba to Ethiopia with his own fish on it?
Yes, because...
What fish did he like? A grouper?
Something like that. I don't remember exactly what fish, but this person told me. This person was in charge.
I'd like to know what fish he used, because look how long he's lived. A man so full of hate and smoked so many cigars and he's still around. I'd like to eat the fish he was eating.
Because his diet, the people around him, they...
No, I understand what you're saying. The bigger point is that... they're starving, and he has an airplane with his own fish on it.
Exactly why the people...
Yeah, I get it. All right, I'm going to do two things. I'm giving you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty, and we're going to play Para Vivir on the Savage Nation for my Cuban friends on the Savage Nation. Hasta la victoria, a little Para Vivir. If you can dig that one up, we're going to play it. Then we're going to talk a little bit more. We're going to talk about ice cream, teenagers, the Fort Hood shooter you're not interested in. You don't care about Major Nidal Hassan, the Muslim, who executed 13 people and wounded 30. You don't care about that. So let's play Para Vivir. Para Vivir. To life. What?
Hello, everybody. It's Barack and Michelle.
Election day is almost here, and people are getting fired up.
And we need you to stay fired up all the way to November 7th.
You don't remember me, but I remember you. 'Twas not so long ago.
You could see I'm in a bizarre mood. I have no idea why I put those two things together. But there's something about it that works for me, Phil. I have never heard a president put together such a hokey... Who was this media guy? Did he quit too? It sounds like he went to a university for that production. Friends, Romans, and countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is often turned with their bones. So let it be with Caesar, the noble Brutus hath told you. Caesar was ambitious. If it were so, it was a grievous fault. And grievously hath Caesar answered it, here under leave of Brutus and the rest... For Brutus is an honorable man, so are they all honorable men. Come I to speak in Caesar's funeral. He was my friend, faithful and just to me. But Brutus says he was ambitious, and Brutus is an honorable man. This is an interesting piece from Julius Caesar, where the line, "the evil that men do lives after them," was originally written. And I guess the reason I'm reading it is because I wanted to read some Shakespeare in order to bring my mind back from the brink of total insanity, from focusing on politics and only talking about politicians. Sometimes, I mean, you have to read in a foreign language to keep your mind, you keep your mind from going completely blank. Let me tell you, Shep in Kansas City, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, simply, I just wanted to tell you, I enjoy the way you write. You somehow manage to write like you speak. So it makes reading your books, in essence, like listening to
So like
show.
When you're reading Trickle Up Poverty, do you hear my voice as you're reading it?
No question. Not just
true. A lot of people have said that it's written in my voice, which is true.
I am
fundamentally a speaker. I'm first a speaker and then a writer. And the fact is that the book is written to sound as though it is my voice. Shep, stay in the line. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Everybody's a winner today on the Savage Nation. And let us now go to Portland, Oregon. By the way, if anyone's listening in Washington, D.C. on the new TNT, what's the dial position, Beowulf? I don't want to... 7:30 on the dial. We're heard loud and clear in the heart of D.C. I'm on 6 hours a day. I'm on live right now, and the next day I'm on 6 hours a day. Today's show tomorrow, and then that show live, blah, who, whatever. And that's to keep everyone straight. The station's known as The Truth. But, of course, you're welcome to call from anywhere, of course, New York, wherever you're listening. It's an easy day. It's Wednesday. It's like a bridge day. How far away are we from the election where we'll know whether or not we've averted the bullet of socialism? 2 weeks away. If Obama doesn't lose 50 seats, if it's less than 50 seats, the communists around him are going to say it was simply collateral damage. It was worth it to us. We still have the majority. It's worth pushing the Leninist agenda. I don't care if we lose again, because we're going to get this agenda all the way through. And that's how they're going to see it. It's very important that you vote to bump the Dems out. I'm telling you, you got to bump them out.
Savage.
A savage display of conservative intellectual firepower by Ted Nugent. And here's what he says. If Dirty Harry wrote books instead of blowing away bad guys, he would have written Trickle Up Poverty. Thankfully, Michael Savage wrote it instead. Instead of wielding a 44 Magnum Smith & Wesson and cleaning up the streets of San Francisco like Dirty Harry, Mr. Savage banged away on the keyboard with Magnum force and wrote a conservative Magnum manifesto in Trickle Up Poverty. While relaxing in my deer blind waiting to put an arrow through the pump station of an ultra-alert Texas white-tailed deer, I read Mr. Savage's new book. Instead of my predator eyes scanning the Texas brush for the slightest hint of movement, I found myself focused instead on Mr. Savage's dead-eye truth and common-sense words. This may have been the very first time in my hunting life that my predator attention was focused completely on something other than grocery shopping for a white-tailed deer. Many of us know Mr. Savage as the irrepressible, intelligent, and highly entertaining AM radio talk show tour de force. His radio program is the antidote for all things politically correct, status quo, brain dead, and anti-freedom. Mr. Savage's no-holds-barred radio speech got him banned from entering the UK after some liberal, limey, socialist bureaucrat claimed Savage is a provocateur of hate speech. Addicted to free speech and logic, Winston Churchill would have fired the limey bureaucrat and recommended that the Queen make Mr. Savage a knight. In typical left-wing slash-and-burn politics, liberal goons can't stand an opposing argument and self-evident truth, which is why they resort to squawking about how conservatives are racist, homophobic, and the standard whining when no sound argument can be offered. I'm reading again from Ted Nugent's review of Trickle Up Poverty in today's Washington Times. Mr. Savage crushes these numbskulls in an avalanche of historical references, conservative ideology, and common sense. The truth contained in Trickle Up Poverty could ultimately set them free, or they can cling to their liberal bias and blindness and remain shackled and enslaved in their hopeless denial. Who needs Comedy Central when the parade of clowns just won't go away? Trickle Up Poverty is a blazing flamethrower of truth that burns through subjects such as how President Obama's policies are crushing the middle class, the societal suicide of open borders and illegal immigration, the curse of Acorn, czars, the healthcare fraud, and other such America-destroying horror stories. Written in a passionate, full-auto style, and painstakingly researched, each chapter will arm you with a stockpile of intellectual ammo. Michael Savage swings a literary crowbar of truth and writes with a sledgehammer style. This is very good. This is like Walter Winchell. He pulls no punches and goes right for the jugular with facts, not vacuous hyperbole like Hope and Change. Mr. Savage is my kind of radio host and my kind of writer. I crave all things bold, unapologetic, defiant, witty, and smart. Trickle-up poverty satisfies my cravings, and then some. Read it and then dance naked around the campfire of truth. If anything, trickle-up poverty exposes the radical Marxist governing abuses and ideologies of the Obamacrats. Mr. Savage not only exposes how the Marxists in power are doing their best to destroy America, but offers antidotes to their intentional ultra-destructo Saul Alinsky playbook with pragmatic common-sense solutions that would cause our forefathers to nod proudly in agreement. Mr. Savage is their kind of patriot. Mr. Obama and his army of Fedzillocrats, not so much. One of my jobs is to cause liberal loons to thrash about in uncontrollable anger. Trickle-up poverty will cause idiots, commies, socialists, Fedzillocrats, and various left-wing apologists and assorted bloodsuckers to overheat instantly and then spontaneously combust. Burn, baby, burn. Trickle-up poverty is intellectual ammunition. Lock and load. Every American who wishes to return to the great American way should read this book and gift it to everybody he cares about. Ted, thank you.
Savage. It is the Savage Nation.
So I said at the outset of this show and at the outset of the book, Obama is a pan-Leninist. Many of you have heard the word socialist, and that's a good start, but he's actually a pan-Leninist because he is operating on a global level. And the future that Obama envisions for this country is really not very pretty. Euro carbon taxes, euro disarmament, euro health care, euro welfare, euro spending levels, euro tax levels, euro unemployment levels, euro speech control. And any American reader, any reader of this book who wants to know where the Obamification will lead, all they have to do is go to England and see what's going on there. In this respect, Obama is proving to be one of the most dangerously inexperienced presidents to occupy the Oval Office. Yes, he knew how to run a campaign, but he has no idea how to run a government. Yet, his incompetence has not stopped or even slowed him from pursuing his radical agenda to fundamentally transform this nation. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I open the microphone today to you. All you got to do is dial 1-800-449-8255 and call. I mean, the subjects are pretty clearly laid out there. Let's go to New York City on WOR. Barbara, go ahead, please.
Michael, I just want to comment about your book. I think this is your legacy, and you really left your mark. And I think in the future, this book, and I believe I do have hope in America, it's going to come around. And when it does, Michael, your book is going to be infamous. I believe that.
Well, I hope so. I think that it is quite a manifesto, and I think it is my opus. It's very hard to conceive of a better book on the subject of socialism in America and methods that they are using and methods to block them and to stop them. There's no question about it. This is not just a glib little book. With a sharp little title that you peddle on a show like Corned Beef does, where there's no substance to it. This book has ideas, and this book offers solutions.
And I think it's going to be used as a teaching tool in the far, far future for our children.
Well, it should be used as a teaching tool. If America is saved from the communists that have taken over the educational establishment, it should be used as a teaching tool. But I've been working in the wilderness of rejection for almost 16 years now of radio. I'm used to it. I'm used to being an exile. In fact, being an exile strengthens me.
Michael,
you know, I mean, what do you think? I really want to be invited to the White House? I don't really want to be invited to the White House. I don't care who wins.
Thank you
for calling the show. 1-800-449. She meant well. That's all. She meant very well. Ann Arbor, Michigan. Steve, you're up. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. Well, I'm here in the heart of liberal Ann Arbor. And, you know, your words are what are needed to stem back this tide of liberalism. Unfortunately, until they get out in the working world and really work for a living, nothing will change. It's incredible how many people hang on and live in this university environment.
Because the university is a cocoon where everything is provided for the little drug addicts. And the little drug addicts listen to the rubbish put forward by their tenured schmuck professors, and they think that's the real world. But let me remind everyone listening to this show, I have been opposed to communism all my life because I see the devastation that communism has wrought around the world everywhere it's been tried. The worker has never benefited from a communist revolution, never. The worker has always been sold the nonsense that after the revolution, after nationalizing the nationalizing businesses, the bourgeoisie would be strung up and their property distributed to the poor. That has never happened. The worker was supposed to be king. Instead, their property and wealth were always redistributed to the ruling elite, to the bureaucrats. All you have to do is look at Cuba. This is from page 75 of Trickle Up Poverty, spending other people's money. You think I don't know what I'm talking about? I do.
Absolutely, Michael. Keep up the good work.
But you see, you can't tell that to the schmucks in Ann Arbor, Michigan. They spend their days listening to how bad America is. At night, they get stoned and they, whatever they do. They're not learning anything except in the hard sciences. And even there, they've been brainwashed. Steve, I'm sending you a free copy of TUP. Give it away to a commie on campus. So you look at Cuba. What happened there? The workers have been crushed. For 50 years, they've been crushed under the thumb of Fidel Castro, and they remain crushed to this very day. Likewise, the middle class under Venezuela's Hugo Chavez remains oppressed. Have the workers benefited? Of course not. Only Castro's and Chavez's inner circles have been enriched. How can this be? Didn't Marx say, workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains? He was dead wrong. This phenomenon is a reversal of the Marxist-Leninist theories that Obama was programmed to believe. What's more, time and again, the elimination of private enterprise created widespread trickle-up poverty instead of ushering in the promised efficiency and collective profitability that would benefit everyone. They think that nationalization would make things more efficient, but it never has. Listen to me, people. Under communism and socialism, the poor got poorer because Marxism-Leninism inherently enslaves people, body, mind, and spirit. You might want to read that again because it could have been something Ronald Reagan wrote, but he didn't. I wrote it. Contrary to what Marx taught and Obama believes, spreading the wealth around impoverishes us. This really isn't so difficult to understand. Taking money from you and me to give to someone who is looking only for a handout, a bailout, or a way out removes our incentive to excel, to grow, to risk investments, to invent, and to dream big dreams. Why work so hard to underwrite another man's slothfulness? You hear this one? 1-800-449-8255. Shall I tell you about lessons from a tuna fish sandwich? Lessons from a tuna fish sandwich on the Savage Nation. Nah, I don't want to tell you about that. I'll make it the short version. I was 9 years old. I went to work with my father, right? And then I wanted to eat. My father screamed down the stairs as I was cleaning bronze. He says, go buy some lunch. So while I was out of the basement, my heart started to race when it became clear that he wasn't going with me. I hated the thought of facing the mean streets of the Lower East Side alone, dodging the rats, the garbage, and the thugs hanging out in the street corners. I think my father saw my hesitation, but he insisted that I face those horrible streets alone. Sending me out into the byways of Manhattan was how he wanted to toughen me up. My father thought I might be too soft, you know, growing up in a safer neighborhood as we did, so off I go in search of lunch. Several blocks away was a restaurant that served no meat, just salads, tuna fish, and such. I ordered the tuna, paid the man behind the counter, and a few minutes later headed back to the store. When I gave my father the sandwich, he opened it up and saw a huge dead fly in it. I'll never forget his reaction. His face turned red. His eyes went wide as twin saucers, and the veins along both sides of his neck bulged. He looked as if he were ready to erupt like Mount St. Helens. Dad was infuriated that someone would take advantage of his kid like this. He assumed that they did it on purpose just to be spiteful. They probably did, but what did I know? Now, my father wasn't necessarily a violent man, but in that moment he looked as if he could have strangled a bear with his bare hands. He was incensed by the sheer wrongness of what he had discovered. So, my dad grabbed me by the hand and dragged me up the street, back to that lousy luncheonette. He opens the door with a bang and looks around. The sleepy customers glance up from their menus with interest at this new development. Dad spots the owner coming out of the kitchen wearing a smirk and an apron as if nothing was wrong. My father unloaded with both barrels, yelling, "How dare you give my son a sandwich with a fly in it?" The deli man said, "Don't worry, I didn't charge you for it." I learned a valuable lesson that day. I learned that there are bad people in the world who will do bad things for whatever reason, and that remaining silent when faced with wrongdoing isn't an option. It might be unpopular to take a stand. It might turn a few heads. But my father taught me to speak up in the face of adversity, which brings us to Obama's socialist revolution, which is far worse than planting a fly in a tuna sandwich, which is all the more reason you and I have an obligation to speak against the destruction he's planning of this once great country. That's in Trickle Up, pages 76 and 77. So that's not bad. You see, lessons from a tuna fish sandwich. Who else could do that? I'll be right back.
Savage.
So, we're talking about political machinations inside the United States of America. Many of you are tuning into talk radio for the first time all year. You've put aside baseball for 10 seconds, and you're trying to figure out who to vote for. And I'm trying to warn you to stop Obama's attack on our borders, economy, and security. And I'll take callers now, that's all. Where is she? She left, the one who was calling and saying he couldn't impose a Marxist regime. Is she here? Ann in Mississippi, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please. Ann, welcome.
I've listened several times to you, and I always hear you refer to Obama wanting to make this a Marxist, a communist, a socialist nation. Give me an example how he can do that. Congress has that power, not Obama.
Well, I guess you've been living in a vacuum for the last 2 years. He has nationalized General Motors. Are you aware of that?
Yes, and I think it was wonderful. He saved
it. Then you're arguing that you do like socialism. He nationalized health care, 1/6 of the economy. I guess you like that as well because you're a socialist. So you're saying, how can it be done when it's been done? Why don't you just say you approve of Marxism?
He's helping people, middle class people.
Well, wait, hold it, ma'am. You're changing the argument. You said, how can he do it? He needs Congress to do it. He's done it. He's done it with the auto industry, and he's done it with health care. So why won't you admit that he's already turned a good portion of the economy into a Marxist economy?
With the help of Congress. He cannot do anything on
his own. Well, now you're changing the argument. You just said at the beginning he couldn't do it at all without Congress, but he just did it.
Do you want these lunatics out here to really be running our country?
Ma'am, I didn't hear what you just said. Do I think what?
Do you actually want the people that are running as a Tea Party candidate to run our country? I think y'all are going to bite off more than you.
Well, now you're changing the argument. So you acknowledge that you're a socialist. You admire Obama because he has pushed forward socialism in his first 2 years, and you want him to do more of such nationalizations. And now you're changing the argument and asking a generic question. Do I want the lunatics in the Tea Party to run the country? Which lunatics in particular do you fear the most?
Sharon Angle.
Why do you fear Sharon? Why do you like Harry Reid, who was a part of the corrupt old boy network? Do you prefer that? You don't want a real woman? A real Western woman who understands what it's like to be honest? You don't want an honest, real Western woman? Why would you want Harry Reid, an old boy who is working with the old boy network? I'm kind of surprised at that.
Well, that's what the Republicans are, too, so what's the difference?
But now you're changing the argument again. You know, a man defined hell as a place where there is no reason. You are actually trying to drag me into your hell. You have no reason in your head, madam.
I am a...
The minute you lose a point, you change the discussion to another point.
Point. My point is, y'all are saying Obama is going to tear this country apart. He can't do it. He cannot do it.
He is the most divisive president the country has ever... It is because Obama is using divide and conquer as a tactic, turning black against white, Asian against white, young against old, gay against straight, old against young, young against old. He is using classic tactics of divide and conquer, Ann.
He walked into that Oval Office with all sorts of things strapped to his back.
So he inherited a deficit of how large was the deficit when he took office?
I don't know. I don't remember.
It was $1 trillion. How large is the deficit now, Ann?
Well, I know, but he's been trying to help.
Well, wait, hold it. No, you don't. What do you mean you know? You said you didn't know. I gave you the answer. It was $1 trillion. Bush left him a $1 trillion deficit, so now you know that. So what's the deficit now after 2 years of Obama?
It's astronomical. I don't know the exact number. But
well, it's $3 trillion. So your idea of solution, the solution to a $1 trillion deficit is to raise it to $3 trillion?
Give him time. Give him
time. Give him time. It'll be $10 trillion. And who is going to pay for all of these socialist programs?
I guess the American people.
Who are the American people? The poor who pay no taxes? The only people who are going to pay for this insane spending is the middle class, because the super wealthy, as you well know, evade taxes to a great extent. And so the people who are getting hammered the most, Dan, are people, perhaps your own neighbors. It's the middle class that Obama has targeted, because as a Marxist, he has targeted the bourgeoisie ever since his zany college days. But are you yourself a member of the lower, middle, or upper class, Ann?
I'm probably now middle class.
After what do you mean now? What were you before?
Before Bush took office, we were probably upper middle class. He shrunk the middle class.
Okay, so you didn't like Bush because he did what? What did Bush do that you didn't like?
I didn't like anything about him.
But you're not giving me a specific. Now you're talking about style. So you like Obama's style because what? He's good looking? Is that it?
Has nothing to do with it. I don't care about that.
Well, I think I touched on a raw nerve. You didn't like Bush because he reminded you of your father and you had some kind of abuse with the father. I can sense it. Your father, you know, abused you when you were 11. I get it. I'm sending you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. You can read it in the privacy of your own latrine.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Everybody, it's Barack and Michelle.
Election day is almost here and people are getting fired up.
And we need you to stay fired up all the way to November 2nd.
This year's elections are just too important to sit out because there's so much at stake right now for our future and for our children's future. Each of you can make a difference.
Thank you very, very much.
Let
them eat ice cream. Lecture about carrot sticks and eat hamburgers, french fries, and ice cream. How much of this rubbish can you take from these power-crazed ruling class leftists under Obama? How much of these lies from the liberal media and the liberal ulterior motivated organizations such as Media Matters, funded by Soros? And by the way, the more that groups like the NAACP push race-baiting, sanctimonious filth about racism and Nazism in the Tea Party, the more mainstream Americans are repelled by them, the more they see the double standard, which is why the Tea Parties grow and grow and grow. People see right through the NAACP. They see right through Michelle and Barack. They're appalled by the leftists' underhanded dealings and corruption and lies. They're hateful of the race-baiting, the divisiveness, and the anti-constitutional takeaway America, a playbook of Barack Obama. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Now, I want to ask a question I asked 2 weeks ago. Have you gone into a bookstore and had trouble finding Trickle Up Poverty? Where and when? I want the report on my desk right now. Pittsburgh, Betty, you're on the Savage Nation.
And we did have problems with your book because we sold out the first day. And guess who was buying it, Michael?
Who?
Everybody. I mean, I've sold your books for a number of years. And what they were buying, the people who were buying was sort of a different, I don't know, maybe like a middle-aged, I don't know. I don't know how to describe them, but right now, they are from high school
all the way through to senior citizens.
And you're kidding. High schoolers are buying trickle-up poverty?
You bet.
Isn't that interesting? So there's hope for America. Not all of them have been, let us say, brainwashed or, you know, put on so much Ritalin they don't even know what's going on.
Not only that, but your book is the first book to generate the kind of conversation in the bookstore. And, I mean, if there's time, I'll tell you a little quick, funny story. But
no, that's okay. That's okay. You own the bookstore, though?
No, I don't own it. I work for Borders Bookstore.
Oh. Well, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty for Your Trouble. Thank you, madam. I appreciate it very much. 1-800-449-82. George, Houston, Texas, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I just want to let you know this is the greatest country in the world, and you know that. And I got involved in the election, now a precinct judge, because of all the fraud that's going on with all the, you know, the fraudulent ballots. And I want to let you know I was born in Cuba, came to this country in 1967, and that was the greatest decision my father ever made.
Right, and you see us going sort of in the direction of Cuba under Barack Obama, I assume, don't you?
Most certainly, and that's the reason why I've got involved. You know, my brother and my sister-in-law are kind of heading up one of the tea parties over there in Houston, and they kind of got me involved, and I've decided that it's time. You know, I'm tired of sitting.
No, very soon the NAACP will declare that you're a racist for joining a tea party.
Well, then so be it, Dr. Savage.
Yes, so be it. That's right. So be it. It's interesting to me that, you know, it takes one to know one. Let's put it to you that way. The ones who scream racism the most usually are the most racist. That's what I discovered. Does that work for you?
That works for me.
That works for me. Yeah, let them keep screaming it, because usually those who scream the most about racism are the, in my, let's say, limited experience, usually harboring some racist feelings. You know, let's put it that way. Stay in the line. You get a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. I'm giving them out all week on the Savage Nation. Let's go to New York City, WOR. Marianne, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, good evening from New York City, from the island of Manhattan, where I grew up. The pleasure.
Oh, my God. You're a native Manhattanite.
I am a
How
native
refreshing.
I'm from New York, Michael. So you know what that's like.
Why do so many people who come from somewhere else think that they become a movie star simply because they live somewhere in a hovel in Manhattan? How does that work?
I don't know, Michael, but all they do is they keep their head up in the sky, and then they fall down, and they wind up in my hospital, of which I'm on 59th Street, by Borders, by Time Warner Building. And, Michael, can't get your book. It's very hard to get. And yes,
why? Why can't you get it in Borders on 59th Street? It's sold out, probably.
Every other book is there. The Pinhead's book is there. I can see it. I can see all the other Obama books and all
that. No, we affectionately call him Leprechaun on the show. Because I was able to push Leprechaun down to number 3. He's furious, I hear, from inside sources. He's livid with rage. He's like a bartender in the old Upper West Side when the Westies ran it with Billy Clubs.
Well, Michael, it's really an honor to talk to you. And, yeah, you know, you've changed.
Are you a nurse in a hospital?
No, I'm part of the clerical staff. I work with the union, Michael. Yes, I'm not the union.
No, I don't mind. I was once. Hey, what's the difference? I was once a teacher and once a member of a teachers union, and when it came time for the union to defend me, they took the side of management and stabbed me in the back. That's when I discovered what unions are good for.
That's what they're all about now, Michael. But yeah, Michael.
That's right. They gave me a good stabbing in the back instead of defending me. They defended the management. Anyway, Marianne, I'm sending you a free copy because you're having trouble getting it. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Now let's go across the nation to Sacramento, California, KSTE. On the dial, John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, a pleasure to talk to you again.
Yes, indeedy.
I just wanted to let you know that I spent a couple of hours last weekend trying to find your book. I started at a Barnes & Noble. No luck. I talked to the knucklehead kid with the piercings behind the counter. He just kind of looked at me with drool coming out of the side of his mouth. went to the Borders. No drool this time, and no kid with piercings, but they didn't have it. I went to a Walmart, and they did not have it.
See, the problem is a lot of people think that the book's being hidden. It's selling out, and they haven't been able to get reordered in time. I don't think a lot of it's being hidden. Some of it is. There's no question that the drooling leftist with nose rings are doing the best that they can to make sure that the Jester's book remains number one. But I'm sending you a free copy of Tup. Stay on the line. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Houston, Texas. Chris, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
You are today's Radio Free Europe. I just got to let you know, your voice is like the warm blanket of freedom that we all look forward to every day for these 3 hours.
That's very beautiful to hear. That makes me, you know, worth getting up in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, you do.
I'm going to give you an example of how I sacrifice for this show, and I'm not doing this because I want any sympathy. Tomorrow night, there's a playoff game here in San Francisco. Who is it, Bagel? I don't even know. The Giants? I don't follow. It's some huge game. Tickets are $1,000 a piece. And frankly, my whole family is going. They said, Dad, you got to come with us. It's going to be a great night for the game. And he said, we got 7 tickets. My son flew up with a surprise. You know what? I'm not going. You know why I'm not going? Because I want to be on the air with my audience. That's how we say either I'm dedicated or demented, but I don't want to go to the game. I'd rather be here. I mean, this is how I'm devoted to this show.
Right. Sounds like a perfect opportunity to have a great bottle of wine and some good Italian food.
I know. Well, I would drink beer in the stand. But then, you know, then I don't know, the rowdiness, the claustrophobia, the peanuts, and then what? I'm not into it that much. To me, I'd rather be here in front of the microphone talking to the people who listen to this show. You know, maybe I should go. I don't know. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. I could run a poll right now. Should I go or not? People say, yes, go. I know most people would go to it, truthfully. I mean, to be frank and perfectly honest, rather, I'm not that big a sports fan to begin with. That's absolutely true. But on the other hand, I am so attached to my audience, and I'm so, what is the word I'm looking for? Remember I said I'm rejuvenated from your response because you're buying the book and you made it go from number 3 to number 2 this last week, and I'm hoping you'll keep buying it right now because we got to knock the comedian off the top slot. The only reason Obama is going on the comedian show is to, of course, garner his base and make sure that they go out and vote. But I also think Obama does not want Trickle Up Poverty to knock the comedian down to number 2, because God forbid that happens, and my book becomes the most talked about book in America, and the cover says Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders, Economy, and Security. What is he trying to say he doesn't want America to know that is in the book? You know, there's a lot in there that they don't want you to know about, so that's why I wrote it, that's all. I'm a student of fascism. I'm a student of totalitarian movements. I'm a student both of the dangers of communism and the dangers of Nazism. And all I can tell you is that I know what this administration is about, whether it is a hybrid of Marxism or a pan-Leninist group, as I say, it doesn't matter. These people are by nature totalitarian in their core. And if they had the ability to do so, I can guarantee you what would happen would be so fast, because the danger is in the fact that when crises happen, the people who come along and say that they have the wisdom and the answer and that they can bring salvation to everybody, as Obama did, they galvanize millions of people. Remember that Adolf Hitler had come to power legally within the existing constitutional system. But what did he do next? He swept democracy away. Would Obama do that if he had the power to do it? I don't really know. I do know that some of the speeches that Obama gave prior to his election are very worrisome, such as his call for a private national security force, just as big, just as powerful, and just as well-funded as the U.S. military. How come you didn't hear him say that? The man has followed through on every one of his other promises. All in due time, he'll follow through on all of them. Don't you understand this is not a joke? I want you to play Obama's speech, and I want you to listen to these chilling words and tell me if this doesn't worry you. Listen.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
Now, what does he mean by a civilian national security force? Well, it's pretty clear what he means. But why would he say that during the campaign? Because he means it. And frankly, my friends, unless Obama's minions are thrown out in 2 weeks, unless the Democrats are beaten out of office, meaning 50 to 100 of them thrown out, they're going to say it's collateral damage. We lost 25 seats, but we're going to continue to push for our dream, for our vision, for the revolution that we have been waiting for all of our life, in cahoots with the internationalists, who I call pan-Leninists. And I warn you that he will sweep democracy away from this nation. He will have a private national security force. Perhaps it will be the Black Panthers with guns that he will use to intimidate us, the way that he used the Black Panthers at the voting booths 2 years ago in Philadelphia with clubs. Don't say it can't happen here, you idiots. It is happening here. That's one man's opinion, and I'm not a comedian. And I'll be right back.
Savage.
Dominammo il mare. Roma non poteva arrivare all'impero prima di aver schiacciato la potenza marittima di Cartagine.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
The alpha and omega of the Italian voice.
Seems to shine like you've had too much
Dean
wine,
Martin for president. Well, those days are over. We don't even have male crooners anymore. Now it's like whiny chick music in elevators wherever you go. Whiny chick music. Wherever you go. I can't even go shopping in Macy's anymore. I can't take the whiny chick music. What happened to the country? There are no crooners anymore. I mean, where's the male voices? All you hear are the crack musicians. The dirty, filthy, dirty lyrics and violence. What happened to the voice of the tenor, the singer like a Perry Como or a Dean Martin? Where did it go? When did the whiny chick music suddenly become so popular? How did this happen? Everywhere you go in a suit, I can't go into a department store. Just to buy underwear, I want to. I feel like you know that picture of like the people being driven out of heaven, out of paradise? Is it, who drew that paint? Who painted that one? Of Adam and Eve being driven out of paradise. Does anyone know who painted that? Whoever knows that wins a free banana. Hey, well, if you know all of this esoteric stuff. No, you don't have to look it up. But that's how I feel when I go into Macy's, even to buy like a tie. I can't wait to get out of there. It's the chick music. Whiny. It's all whiny music. I don't get it. There's nothing in there that I can't go in there. I like buy online now. I found one pair of sneakers that work. I ordered 12 pair online. I don't know. What's the point of going into a store anymore? When it first started, did you think you'd buy online? I didn't. Oh, no, that new stuff, that newfangled internet, that'll never work. We won't buy online. I almost buy exclusively online now. What am I going to go into a department store for? The whiny chick music, as I say? But you have to go into a bookstore to buy it, just to give the green-haired monsters hell. Sacramento Jeff, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I had a heck of a time at the Borders in Sacramento, where they looked at me as if I was, from the underworld when I asked for Tup.
They made you the bad guy for wanting to buy a book?
Yeah. I'm going into a bookstore, but they don't want it. They treat me like the bad guy because I'm looking.
Well, what are they, younger people who came out of a doper college? Is that it, and that's the best they can do?
This guy was more of a managerial type, but I believe he came from a doper college.
Yeah, well, okay, we can say things about him. But look, these are the bad apples. What's the name of the store? I'll put it right over to my publisher. In fact, you guys write it down and send it to me. I'll email it to my publisher. We'll see if we can get the manager fired. I'm sending you a free copy of the book. Brett in Hawaii, quick, tell us the story. You had a confrontation outside the store. What happened?
Oh, I had no problem in the store. You know, I don't even think they realized your book. But when I got out, I didn't take the wrapper with me, the package, and I'm looking at it.
Oh, the plain brown wrapper. So who confronted you?
Well, I get out in the parking lot, and I'm kind of looking at it, and these two ladies actually had the nerve to approach me.
Well, hold on. I'm sending you a free copy. I'd love to hear the rest of the story. Hold on.
Savage.
I want to get straight to it because joining me on the line is the one, the only, Dr. Michael Savage. He, of course, is nationally syndicated radio superstar and a multiple best-selling author. His latest smash bestseller is called Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attacks on Our Borders, Economy, and Security. His website is michaelsavage.com. Well, Michael Savage, you needed no introduction, but I gave you one anyway.
I always need an introduction. especially on a show with your audience. Monica, look, this book, Trickle Up Poverty, is about the thing that Obama actually is doing and intends to do. And the reason I say intends to do is because, like an elephant, I've recorded and memorialized every one of his policy statements that I thought was significant with regard to our security, et cetera, in the 2 years that he has seized power. It is terrifying to believe that if we don't stop him, what this man will do next. Many people have forgotten what he wants to do to NASA, what he has and wants to do to the military, what he has and does want to do to our nuclear arsenal. So I can go on, and I do in the book. But the fact is, it's not just written as a quick flash in the pan, you know, attack Obama and hope that they buy it. I wrote this book praying to God it would change people's minds before the November elections, and then stop his pan-Leninist agenda before 2012. Because if the Democrats are not turned back in great numbers, as you know, in November, his agenda will roll and roll and roll, because the czars are demonic in their desire to alter this nation. You know that.
Yes. Well, this book is absolutely fantastic. Again, it's called Trickle Up Poverty, and we're talking to the great Michael Savage. I also think, Michael, that this book is critically important for all of the reasons you just laid out. Every American should read it. And I want to start by asking you about the title, Trickle Up Poverty. Tell us what you mean.
Well, you know, Mr. Obama came to power on the myth that he was a Robin Hood who would rob from the rich and give to the poor. But even the poor have turned on him. The only people who haven't turned on him are the rich, because the money is actually coming out of the middle class. It's the middle class that is being attacked in many different ways. I mean, when you say housing loss, that's not the poor, that's the middle class. Job loss, that's not the non-working poor, that's the middle class. People say, well, he's trying to fix that. I would argue to the contrary, as I present in my thesis here, that his radical agenda was aimed square on at the middle class. Because, Monica, you know the rhetoric of the Marxist, which has always been get the bourgeoisie. The old Soviet Union was a two-class society. The powerful, if not the rich, the powerful, the bureaucrats like the Democrats of today, most of whom are very, very wealthy, incidentally. It's strange to me that the Republicans are branded as the rich ones, when if you look at the richest members of Congress, they're people like Nancy Pelosi, et cetera. The rich actually are the old Politburo types in the Democrat Party. Anyway, in the old Soviet Union, there were two classes, as you know. There were the powerful members of the Politburo, and then there were the peasants, the whole rest of society, who were owned lock, stock, and barrel by the bureaucracy. And who was the target of Obama and his minions? The middle class. America has always been defined by its large middle class. He is aimed at the middle class. The confiscatory taxes, the socializing of our health care system, the other legislative initiatives that are taking away our earnings and giving our power to choose how we live our lives and putting it in the hands of corrupt and pro-socialist cohorts. Monica, yesterday an article came out about none other than Bonnie Frank. Let's put aside the man's distasteful nature, and I'm talking about his nature, not his orientation. I don't like the man because of his personality and the lies that he puts out there. This man pretends to be another Robin Hood who's for the poor and the downtrodden. It turns out that in the AIG bailout, which he was one of those who orchestrated, $200 million of that bailout money went to a hedge fund operator on whose jet Bonnie Frank flies to the Virgin Islands and who is one of the greatest donors to the Democrat Party. This is sort of like the banana republics that we used to mock here in the United States of America. And who's doing it? The Democrats. The Democrats. The Democrats. And they have to be stopped. So when I say trickle-up poverty, I don't think it takes a great genius to understand that instead of money flowing down, money is actually being sucked out of the middle class and flowing up into the hands of the very, very rich.
Yeah, it's a very aggressive form of wealth redistribution in a couple of different directions here. Again, we're talking to the great Michael Savage. His book is called Trickle Up Poverty. His website, michaelsavage.com. All of the things that you just laid out, Michael, in terms of the Obama agenda and the Obama ideology, some people have called this classic liberalism. Others have called it a new strain of radical progressivism. Still others say, hey, this is straight up socialism. How do you see it?
I define Obama, and I study this in great detail, as a pan-Leninist. I think that you have to really read Marx and Engels to understand the roots of this man's background. I mean, you could say socialist, you could say Marxist. I mean, they all apply. But more specifically, it's pan-Leninism, which is sort of an international viewpoint. And it's one where there's all the power resides in the hands of the powerful. And the governmental powerful is who I'm talking about, not the rich in that sense. You know, it's interesting to me how other dictators have initially hoodwinked the very rich in their nations in order to buy them off and keep them, you know, on their side. But once they've accrued enough power, they then turn on the very rich in their own country. He's yet to do that because he still needs them. And I'm talking about men like George Soros, who I believe put him in power along with other nefarious figures. He has not yet turned on George Soros, has he? But there's no question that Soros is running scared right now. You saw the story the other day, Monica, where suddenly George Soros comes out as a kinder and gentler, and he says even he can't stop the avalanche that's coming against the Democrat Party.
Yes.
What he's saying
is
he's terrified. He's terrified that with the new Republican conservative Tea Party victory that's coming, they're going to finally drag this man before a tribunal, meaning the Congress, and they're going to find out just exactly how much money he raised or gave to put Obama in power and exactly how much he's profited since Obama's in power. And if any laws have been broken, I think this man better fuel up his entire jet fleet and see if he can get on the Virgin jet to Mars, because I don't think there's a place on this earth that he can hide in.
We're talking to Michael Savage. His new book is called Trickle Up Poverty. His website, michaelsavage.com. Go there to find out where you can hear his fantastic and very powerful and critically important radio show. You know, Michael, I hear this from people all the time. I know you do, all of your callers and the regular folks out there in America. There is a real fear out there that all of the things you just articulated, and in particular, Obamanomics, in all of its forms, stimulus, Obamacare, cap and trade, wealth redistribution, resulting in this sky-high unemployment, high taxes, huge regulatory burdens, unprecedented debt and government control, that it's actually changing the nature of America. And you write about this in Trickle Up Poverty. This is already happening. The complexion, the landscape, the character and nature of America is already changing, isn't it?
Yes, because Obama has said he wants to be transformational. What does that mean? Well, look at the czars he's appointed. They are all outright Maoist communists. They all hate America. They all want to transform our economic system into that of the ex-Soviet Union. What's amazing to me is that I call Obama a destructive child of the type who takes apart a priceless watch that was carefully passed down to him. And without regard for the value of what he holds, he recklessly scatters the pieces on the floor and then can't put them back together again. This is Obama to a T. I'm sitting in stunned amazement as Obama the Destroyer systematically takes apart this great nation piece by piece, while the complicit fifth column government media complex and the lapdog political leaders remain almost silent. I believe he's tearing down everything that was built before this man was even born. And you don't have to look any further than the fundamental requirement of a president to preserve America's borders and national security, despite the massive opposition to illegal immigration. And despite the new Arizona law, which mimics the federal law to stem the flood of lawbreakers entering this nation, who did Obama go after? The people of Arizona, the governor of Arizona, and the Sheriff Arpaio. In fact, he defined himself as a president representing a foreign power. This is a petty dictatorship where he says, listen to this. Here's what he said May 19, 2010. Obama the Destroyer made this astonishing statement to the president of Mexico. In the 21st century, we are defined not by our borders, but by our bonds. What the hell does that mean, Monica?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know what, Michael? I scratch my head, and I know you do too, when you hear folks in the media go, well, I can't understand Obama. You know, doesn't he want to get reelected? Why is he going against 70% of the American people on stimulus, health care, cap and trade, Ground Zero mosque, Arizona illegal immigration law, borders, and so on? Well, I don't know if you share my assessment here, Michael, but to me, it really seems that this man is less of a political animal than he is a pure Saul Alinsky radical ideologue. And that's why when I look at him and I think, you know, you and I have been around politics a long time. We've seen many American presidents. Any other American president with a 10% unemployment rate would be freaking out. This guy is not even breaking a sweat. Why? Because exactly the reason you laid out, because all of this is by design. It's all deliberate.
Yes. And I know you don't have much time, Monica, but in trickle of poverty, I clearly show that the economic meltdown of 08 was orchestrated. It was not by chance. And they did so to push upon the American people a virtually unknown senator from Illinois who moved in on the crisis. The man has only just gotten started. He's young, he's strong, and he's motivated. And after this election, all bets are off as to how far he will go, because he does not care about getting reelected for one reason. There may not be another election. That's really the chilling reality of this gang that has taken over the country. I know these are strong words, Monica, and I know it sounds like rhetoric, but everyone I talk to who's educated as to politics knows that this is true.
Well, you know, when you say that, it does shock a lot of people. But since this guy has been elected, Michael, we have seen one thing after another that's mind-blowing. Things that we have never seen before, that we could never comprehend happening in America. So when you say that, it actually isn't all that far-fetched. And that's why we need to be on guard now. And I know in Trickle-Up Poverty, you lay out a bunch of savage solutions for the economy and our national security, our borders, and so on. But I have one final question for you. Because you know that famous line from the 60s, meet the new boss, same as the old boss?
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna get a lot of new faces in Washington after November's elections. But how do we make sure that they don't start acting like the old big spending folks? And I mean both Republicans and Democrats.
Well, you know I've been on the Republicans' tail for years. I called George Bush a fiscal socialist about 2.5 years into his second term because I saw what he was doing in terms of building bigger government. Block by block. So how do we do it? Tea Party, Tea Party, Tea Party. The new candidates on the block, they're the ones who are going to shake up the system. The old Republican Party, some of them are great guys, but most of them really are the K Street people. And we'll get the same old lobbyists that have been running the Democrats running the Republicans. So I say third party candidates in the sense of the Tea Party people are the only hope we have. And look how much money they're raising. The Mavericks are the ones who can save us, and they're the ones raising the most money because the American people know the danger we're in from the two-party system.
Yes, exactly. And it's the true Mavericks, not the phony fake Mavericks, but the real ones out there, the Tea Party activists who are trying to stay true to what the founding fathers envisioned for this country, which was limited government and individual freedom. Michael Savage, you are awesome. Thank you so much for this.
You're welcome on my show anytime, Monica.
I would love to join you. You just say the word and I'll be there. Dr.
Next
Michael
book.
Savage. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Michael.
No, when you write a book, you're on my show.
Oh, I got to write the book first. Holy cow.
Come on. You can do it.
Michael Savage, with that kind of inspiration, I got to do it now. Thank you so much. You are absolutely fabulous. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Monica. Great being with you.
Savage.
A lot of stories I haven't gotten to, like this. BP payouts transform the Gulf Coast. One of the fishermen says, it don't pay me to work when they're going to pay my claim anyway. Socialism. Drunkorexia growing trend among college students. While drunkorexia is not a medical term, it has become easily understood slang for the practice of swapping food calories for those in alcohol. So you got the girls now on campus. They go to college girl, now you hear? Just like your mother went to college. They go to college and they wind up drunk, and I finished the picture for you. What's going on in this country? What happened to the basis of morality in America? I know you don't want to hear it, but someone's got to say it once in a while. Somebody's got to say a word once in a while about the social meltdown of America. This I can't blame on Obama. This I can blame on Bill Clinton. That's all. This I can clearly blame on Bill Clinton and his immorality. Bill Clinton single-handedly made a certain sexual practice non-sexual and completely broke down the dams of restraint amongst women across the globe. Yes, like Caligula, one man did it all. A one-stop shop of the devil. So now you have this situation on the campuses where they come out alcoholic, drug addicted, sexually addicted, and fit for nothing. If they can get a job in a Starbucks, they're nasty to the customers, as I can tell you from every Starbucks I go into. Every one of them is a nasty college girl who thinks that she should own a website somewhere. Instead, she's a barrister. There's nothing wrong with starting at the bottom. I mean, I've swept floors. I've cleaned houses. I've worked in factories, but I never intended to stay there. And one thing I learned working on the bottom is you better not have an attitude or you'll stay on the bottom. I can tell you that right now. You better do it very cheerfully, because the person above you who has a choice as to whether to promote you or not is not going to promote you because you think you're entitled to be promoted. That's all. The only advice I can give you is don't go into the low-end job with an attitude, because you're going to wind up stuck. You're going to wind up stuck down there. You're never going to move up from it. That's the absolute truth. So you look now, drunkorexia. This is what they do on the campuses. Why is this happening in America? Oh, 100 different reasons. 100 different reasons. Is it because the public perception of alcoholism is not what it once was? I don't know. How did that happen? Campus health educators. Now, let's take that series of words. Campus health educators. It's oxymoronic. There are no campus health educators. There are campus perversion educators. Do you know that in most colleges, particularly the so-called Ivy League, they give out condoms to your daughter when she arrives on campus? Did you know that? Did you know that when the daughters of Orthodox Jewish people wanted their daughters to have a separate off-campus building to live in, because they didn't want them to be exposed to the filth and the pornography on campus? Do you know that Yale University sued the parents to keep them from letting their pristine daughters from living off campus? Yeah, campus health educators, tell me about it. They're all perverts. 99% of them teach the children all of the negative behavior that they are engaging in. So who's going to fix all of this? Who is going to fix the meltdown of the United States of America? Me. I'm going to do it. Washington, D.C., Linda, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, thank you so much for being there and being our voice. And I am so happy to finally be able to listen to you live, because for years I've been listening to you on and off. And the reason it's on and off is because my husband was in the military and we were stationed overseas for many years. So now I'm back. And I'm so happy, and I'm so thankful.
Well, that's right. Thank God my old friend, my good old friend, bought the station in Washington, D.C., TNT, 7:30 on the AM dial, and people now can hear me live. I mean, when Harry Reid is going to and from the Ritz-Carlton, he gets a chance to hear another side of things on the station. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. I hope you give it away to Mr. Reid at his next town hall meeting somewhere in the Ritz-Carlton ballroom. 1-800-449-8255. San Diego, Sue, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Sue?
Hey, good afternoon, Dr. Savage. Just calling
hi.
To say that was a great hi. That was a great interview with Monica Crowley.
Yes, she was wonderful. She was cheerful, supportive, friendly, intelligent. It was great.
Very much so. And also wanted to say I did get your book. I called in to let your show know how widespread it was sold out throughout San Diego, but I did get a copy of it. I'm on Chapter 8. From panthers to acorns, little dictatorships grow.
Well, San Diego would be one of my most natural audiences, given that it is still a very large Navy town, and they understand what Obama's doing to the military. If anyone does, they do. I thank you for calling and the compliments. I'm sending you another free copy. Let's go. Oh, my God, we're just flat out of time in this hour. There's another big hour across the country. Please stay tuned to your local station if you like this show. I will be here with you for another hour on your local station. And, of course, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, please do this for me. If you're saving your money to buy Tup for Christmas, I need you to do it this week. We must knock the jester off the top spot before Obama goes on his show. Send Obama a message. Knock the comedian off the top spot.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Big question today is, why is Obama going on the comedian show? Have you ever heard of a president going on a Comedy Central show and appearing at high schools while giving away free ice cream? Have you heard of anything like this? I haven't. What does it tell you about our America's first Marxist president that he would go on a comedian show? A comedian, by the way, who was so bad that during the writer's strike he had to go off the air because he doesn't write his own material. He only reads the jokes written for him by much more clever men. I guess it's the same with Obama, who, when he goes off the teleprompter, he starts to show his real self. The real question is, why would the president go on an MTV show? Is it to promote his own candidacy? For what? He's not running for anything. So what is he doing? He's trying to excite his base of Comedy Central watchers. Okay, that's true. But could it be that he's also going on the comedian show in order to sell books for the left-wing front man known as the comedian? Is it to keep my book from hitting the number one slot now that it's hit number two? I mean, I pushed the number three, the other number two book down. Corned Beef got pushed down to number three. Now I only have one to go. So is Obama trying to get votes, sell books for the left-wing front man, or is it both? And that leads us to the next question. Is Obama going on MTV to help the comedian promote his book to make sure my book doesn't become number one? So what information is there in trickle-up poverty that Obama desperately wants to keep from the mainstream of America? You understand that? So how would you send the message to Obama, to the comedian, and to the leftist fellow travelers? Would you commit to knocking the comedian off the top spot in the book sales by going to buy Trickle Up Poverty today? Because I need you to do it. And do you think that, this is really crazy altogether, but I'm going to say it. Do you think that book sales are becoming an indicator of the election results? It's an amazing question, but it has to be asked. Now that moves us to hard politics. This week, I'm talking about gutting the military, because one of my biggest fears about Obama is not so much his economic policies, which are a disaster, and everyone knows that. It's the secret war on the military, on NASA, and on our space program in general. In England this week, the leftist prime minister, who posed as a conservative, David Cameron, announced he's going to cut defense spending by 8%. He said he would reduce troop numbers by 17,000, scrap airplanes, tanks, and artillery, and eliminate 25,000 civilian jobs in the defense ministry. All of that may be justifiable. But Cameron also plans to destroy a major league British aircraft carrier, the Ark Royal, which is designed and able to launch fixed-wing jets and also to get rid of its entire fleet of Harrier jump jets. Now, although David Cameron is trying to destroy the British military in 2010, in the 1930s, Winston Churchill was trying to save the military. You see, throughout the 30s, Churchill was out of favor, and he was under a ruling party dedicated to pacifism. And so he attacked the leaders of his own party for failing to address Britain's security needs and for failing to rearm England while Germany built up their massive military machine. Realizing the danger Britain was in, Churchill pushed again and again for greater military expenditures. Once a fellow member of parliament interrupted Churchill during one of his speeches in favor of more air defense and said, "How much is enough?" Churchill said the question reminded him of a man who got a telegram saying, "Your mother-in-law is dead. Wire instructions." The man, Churchill said, replied, "Embalm, cremate, bury at sea. Take no chances." In 1934, Winston Churchill might have been talking about David Cameron when he wrote, "I marvel at the complacency of ministers in the face of the frightful experiences through which we have all so newly passed. I look with wonder upon the thoughtless crowds disporting themselves in the summer sunshine, and upon this unheeding House of Commons, which seems to have no higher function than to cheer a minister, and all the while a terrible process is astir, the enemy is arming. So Churchill tried to save the military during the 30s because he saw what was coming. What does that have to do with the U.S. today? What does it have to do with Barack Obama? As I point out in Trickle Up Poverty, I have a whole chapter on how he's gutting the military. Obama intends to reduce our nuclear stockpile during the most dangerous time our nation has faced in generation. He intends to destroy NASA. All the while, our enemies around the world are building up their military power, building up their nuclear capabilities. Obama wants to bring it all down, girl. Now look, England is too far gone. Its strength drained by too many decades of pacifism, multiculturalism, and Marxism. The United States still has a chance. If we can throw off the shackles of Obama's trickle-up poverty and anti-militarism, then we may still have a chance. But if we allow our military to be gutted like England's military is being gutted, then in the words of Winston Churchill, we will sink into the abyss of a new dark age. That's my analysis of it. Trust me on this. Obama the space cadet. Some are saying he's a space cadet. I disagree completely. I believe that Obama is a very intelligent man. And I wouldn't mock him because he uses a teleprompter. And I wouldn't mock him because he makes mistakes when he's off the teleprompter. I wouldn't mock him at all. I think you're miscalculating the man if you do so. Instead, I recommend that anyone listening to this show who's a member of a Tea Party or would like to become a member of an American Tea Party, a real one, other than the one run by the Republican Front Group under Dick Armey, take a look at what I propose. Protect the Constitution, reject cap and trade, demand a balanced budget, enact fundamental tax reform. Look, I don't want to read the 37 points. It exhausts me. It's all in my book. English only. Close the borders. Defend the borders. Defund and repeal Obamacare. Reduce the size of government. Liquidate TARP. Oil for illegals. Strike down Anchor Babies Law. Export jailed illegal aliens. Fire Janet Napolitano. Use profiling to prevent terror attacks. Name the enemy. Rewrite the rules of engagement. Save the Navy SEALs. Reinforce the military infrastructure. Pay raise for military personnel. That is active duty combat troops, by at least 10% a year. Impose tariffs on China. Health savings plan. Flat tax. Keep the estate tax at zero. No to the VAT tax. Reduce pay and pensions for civil servants. Defend the Defense of Marriage Act. Encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens. Tax credit for each child conceived and carried to birth. Increase the subsidies for each year the couple remains married. End affirmative action, limit welfare benefits, voting reform, boot the czars, put the brakes on GM. 33, reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule. 35, encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship. 36, institute tort reform. Finally, run the country like a business, not an empire. That's in the chapter that ends on page 309. Run the country like a business, not an empire. I want to talk about this. Owing to the success of this book, it's really a runaway bestseller. And it was done without cable television. It was done without the internet. There's not been one review of the book. There's one review in the Washington Times. It was done strictly on the basis of this show. What does that tell me? It tells me that talk radio is not only not dead, but talk radio is very much alive. It tells me that although the midstream media has been claiming for years now that talk radio is dead, that the empty skirts who have been saying that this is a medium only for fringe extremists or old men, that talk radio is only for old men, with the runaway success of this book, Trickle Up Poverty, driven only by the show, I've proven them all wrong. With Trickle Up Poverty, I, Michael Savage, have shown that without the help of the empty skirts, without the help of the so-called conservative media, without the help of the newspapers and the government media complex, you, the Savage Nation, and talk radio can motivate people to make a number one bestseller. It's not something that the internet has ever done, by the way. Now, we all hear that the internet is the king, and a lot of people ran to the internet with their advertising money. Yet everyone knows that no one's been able to monetize their investment in the internet. Nobody. Moreover, every book that a blogger has come out with has fallen flat on its face because nobody knows who the bloggers are. people know who Michael Savage is. You see, talk radio is a medium that you can't hide yourself easily in. You can't hide behind a mustache and such. 3 hours a day, Jerry. 3 hours a day, Jerry. Mr. Mustache on Fox. And unless you have a massive production staff who is talking for you, you're not going to get very far, right? But I don't have a massive staff. I have a very small and very good staff. And when you do talk radio right, people get to know you. People get to understand that you're a real person and they relate to you. What I'm saying is I've proven that talk radio is a very vibrant medium today. People who listen to talk radio are more acutely aware of what's going on than the average American. Although the fraudulent elites, or shall I say the self-proclaimed drug addicts with microphones and cameras in front of their faces, laugh at you, the average listener to talk radio is far more knowledgeable politically than they would like you to believe. And by the way, listeners to talk radio vote both with their wallets and their ballots. Savage Nation listeners have lined up at bookstores around the country demanding their copy of Trickle Up Poverty. And believe me, come November, they're going to line up at polling places demanding an end to the naked Marxism of Obama and the Democrat Party. And so I want to repeat and summarize by saying talk radio is not a dying medium. It is stronger than ever. It is stronger than it's ever been before. In my 16 years in radio, it's had its ups and downs. But right now, we have seen the talk radio and the Savage Nation are responsible for the mighty blow that is being struck against socialism in America. And I believe this will grow until 2012 when it forces the Democrats off the political landscape for having introduced Democrat socialism and worse to the United States of America.
Savage.
Here's Mike McIntyre, the Democrat from North Carolina, on Nancy Pelosi running for Speaker.
She's probably not going to run for Speaker again. And if she does, I'm confident she's going to have opposition, and I look forward to supporting that opposition. We want to have a more moderate type of alternative for leadership, and I'm confident we're going to have that. You know, when she had opposition before, I voted for her opposition, not for her. And we're expecting her to have opposition this time.
More moderate is good, but even better is no Democratic leadership of the House. Bill Clinton is obviously not too keen to be back at the homestead with Hillary, so he's out stumping for Dem Representative Meek in Florida. This is no movie, Mr. Clinton. This is an Obama fantasy that will never get to play out. Hillary popular? I think he failed to inhale once too often. Listen, Mr. Clinton just wants to have us listen to him now.
Here's the deal. I want to just talk to you because the important thing is what happens to the people who aren't in this room. And I want to tell you what I will plead with you to say to the young people who are not here, who don't think they're going to vote, and the people who aren't here who don't think they're going to vote for Kendrick. And let's just, first of all, start with the obvious. This man's been a good member of Congress. He served Florida well, and he served America well. He's developed an unusual amount of influence and impact and expertise over a wide range of things, including national security matters. He's the only person you can vote for who actually has done things already to try to prepare himself for the enormous responsibilities we're not talking about in this campaign, which is to keep this country safe.
Pushing the people to vote? Boy, are they scared. To keep this country safe, Mr. Clinton, we need to stop demoralizing our military and let it do its job. David Axelrod, an advisor to Obama, came out with some real gems. Okay? Listen.
I think you're going to see an election where, people win who perhaps you didn't expect to win. People lose who perhaps you didn't expect to lose on both sides. What I would suggest to you is you stay up for the full night and total it up at the end. I think it's going to be a more interesting night than perhaps some.
What an advisor he must be. But moving on. I have promised you for years I would never run for office. I said I would never run for office for a couple of reasons. A, I'm not a good listener. I cannot pretend I'm listening to somebody in a committee meeting. I can't go, yes, yes, yes. I'm not good at groupthink or group speak. I also don't like traveling. I also don't like formality. I detest fundraising. So I said, I will never run for office. But I had an idea last night. I'd like to run it by you. What if I could become the first digital senator? I thought. Now, I know it's a pipe dream right now. But, you know, Thomas Jefferson is dead. You realize that the founding fathers have been dead a long time, and we no longer use horseback to get to Washington, D.C. in order to get together with the other guys and discuss politics and vote. We have a modern thing called a telephone and something even more modern called the Internet and something even more modern than that called texting. And I'm asking myself, what if I could become the first digital senator? What if the rules could be changed which say that if you're elected, duly elected senator, you don't have to go to Washington. You can conduct all your business by email, by telephone, by texting. Now, what is the advantage to that? The advantage is pretty clear to me. You can't get graft and you can't get payoffs very easily because you're not going to be doing any backroom deals verbally. In other words, a lot of the horse trading in Congress is done, you know, over dinners where no one's listening. What if all of my correspondence was public, all my email correspondence on every issue, on every bill, and you could read my emails as I wrote them because you're my constituents, I'm saying to myself. Wouldn't that be a wonderful new America where every senator has to communicate via email so that his constituents can actually read who he's meeting and what he's saying to them? I thought to myself in the idealistic dream world that I live in. And so therefore, if the rules could be changed, and if there was a state that would have me, I would amend my statement that I would never run for office. Because I thought that that might be a place I would belong, where I could do the people's business, which is the U.S. Senate.
Savage.
Communists in the media are working overtime trying to push the importance of big pharmaceutical solutions, even though they have not been properly tested. Well, this sounds like another money grab, and maybe they don't have our best interests at heart. Joining us now is Robert Scott Bell, who's been keeping his eye on this big pharma for us.
Thanks again, Michael. Always great to be with you and the Savage Nation audience, especially when we can get the message of liberty out to even more people. And, you know, whenever health freedom is assaulted, and whether it's by government officials or those in the polluted, toxic, pharmaceutically conflicted mainstream media, we take it head on and set the record straight. Now, this could be because it's Nancy Pelosi talking or Kathleen Sebelius from the Department of Health and Human Services. It could be Chris Matthews. It doesn't matter to us. But this week, I actually had to bring up an unnamed radio doctor, let's just call it that, a veteran of health talk radio that I sometimes refer to as the Edsel. But it's time to ruffle the pharmaceutically encrusted feathers of this so-called America's, self-proclaimed America's doctor, because he went after physician's assistants, pharmacists, and nurses, RNs and nurse practitioners.
What? Why?
Because their flu vaccination rates were not up to snuff to him, not as much as the medical doctors. In other words, he was saying that he was really pleased. The medical doctors all want to get their flu shots, but he's just questioning, how is it that nurses and they're not as enthusiastic about getting their annual flu shot? And he actually brought up that they might not be able to think. They may be dumb. And I just, you know, this is really outrageous. They've got loads of education. They have the ability to scan the journals, the publications, and maybe even read the inserts. As, you know, now you get free flu shots with photo processing at your corner drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
The questioning that is going on out there, because remember, with all the propaganda of the swine flu scam of 2009, we covered that many times, the fact is that they went so far overboard in their reaction and their promotion of shots for everybody without really looking at the science involved. And now we're finding out that this year's flu shot, which has already been given in Australia because of their season is opposite to ours, more and more children reacting horribly with seizure disorders, Guillain-Barré, things like this. We're finding it exists, and yet no questioning is allowed from our government officials, the bureaucratic oligarchy at the CDC, the FDA. And I think it's only reasonable to ask questions to read inserts.
Well, that's because we're not supposed to question this administration.
Yeah, I know this unthinking and this unquestioning thing, that to me really flies in the face of liberty. It really flies in the face of individual liberty, this idea that we can assess things, whether we have degrees or not, whether we have licenses or not, and basically decide what we want to do with our health, with the health of our children. Yet you've got these arrogant, sometimes MDities, and I joke with my MD buddies, you know, they talk about this, where the ego overwhelms even their education, that can no longer think clearly. And in the case of so-called America's doctor, he likes to say, how dare 62% of all Americans are actually questioning the flu shot, some linking vaccines to autism, which we know is a controversy out there, but then he adds on, and side effects that they actually think there are side effects. And anybody with a lick of sense can open up an insert, can read the studies, and know that there are always potential side effects to flu shots. Very real and very rational that Americans are asking these questions as they're rushing in and mandating it, so-called, for more and more Americans, which brings to rise, you know, your concepts and trickle-up poverty that so much of the left, so much of the Obama administration is doing whatever it can to dumb down the masses to accept things. In fact, you know, while certain doctors may question your ability to question, you have people like Bill Clinton hitting the stump and trail for some of these Democratic candidates, and he actually went out in support of scary Harry Reid.
Let's play a clip.
You and I know that the only reason this is a tough race is that this is a tough time. And when people are having a tough time and they're frightened and they're confused and they're mad, it's hard to think.
This is unbelievable to me.
So what we have are elitists, largely, and it's not exclusive to the left, because we're now hearing that some of the Republicans in the Senate are actually telling their donors that they're not going to repeal Obamacare, that they just want to massage it and manage it and modify it, which tells me that the Tea Party really has got to do some work here in making sure the candidates they put up into office are willing to go on principle and stand by those principles and not become enmeshed in this big government liberal conservative, which we couldn't call it truly conservative, but if we can call it a conspiracy to grow government just so long as they remain in power.
I've been saying all along the Tea Party shouldn't let either party tell them what to do.
Well, exactly, because we see the elitists in the GOP are fully embracing big government, bureaucratic oligarchy takeovers of freedom. And that's, you know, the horrendous passage of Obamacare, even though they stood against it, the reality was not well enough because they passed it. And now that so-called mandate is in place that you can't even say no, which, of course, we know there are a lot of court challenges. Last week, we acknowledged there was a federal judge in Detroit that said, oh, there's no basis for the suit. But now we hear a federal court judge in Florida says, yes, indeed, there are legitimate constitutional challenges, which is another thing you've covered about the fact that they went in and say, no, it's not a tax, it's a penalty. So if you don't participate, it's a penalty. But once it was passed, in order to defend its constitutionality, they simply changed their mind and said, oh, well, Obama says it's a tax now. Yep, it's a tax. So wave their magic wand of sorcery, and it becomes whatever the heck they want it to say and be.
The left has been denying the truth for years. It doesn't matter to them.
Now, I realize that there are some, elitist doctors that don't like health freedom. I mean, again, many of my friends in the medical profession are all endorsing health freedom because they want to see the costs come down and legitimately people getting well again. But certain docs, unfortunately, some in media, a lot in media, in fact, are just they just say, well, you don't have a right. You shouldn't have a right to have health freedom to get ripped off and scammed. And I'm thinking, you know how many hundreds of thousands of Americans a year are being ripped off and scammed by government-sanctioned medicine?
Exactly.
So you don't have a right for freedom, but you have a right or an obligation to be enslaved to Obamacare, which only endorses and strengthens that monopoly, which is so dangerous, not only to the health and life of the people, but also that stifles innovation, discoveries that could genuinely be reversing a lot of these diseases, and many of which, in fact, are now acknowledged to be man-made.
Why do you say that?
There's a story out of they took samples, tissue samples from mummified mummies, basically, from ancient Egypt. And there's no cancer. They didn't have cancer. And, they were living long, too. And indicative of the fact that we've just abandoned all logic and common sense in nutrition looking at everything as drug deficiencies, like we all need more pesticides in our diet, and it does nothing in a vacuum, no cancer. And of course, recognizing now that man's arrogance is participating in the creation of disease, for which then we fall into the Obamacare monopoly of the only ones that can treat the disease, as opposed to the Americans that are waking up, reading your books, for instance, on nutrition, and learning that the power to heal is indeed theirs.
Just further proof that liberals do not want people to empower themselves with natural medicine.
Yeah, and the left is really worshiping science as if it were religion. It's something called scientism, and it isn't real science. It's not legitimate science. It's scientism, a belief system. They don't question it. They don't want you to question it. And just like the 20th century father of propaganda, Edward Bernays, you know, so at the beginning selling pianos by selling music rooms, now the pharmaceutical drug manufacturers are selling drugs by selling the diseases they treat. Coming back to your classic example of statin drugs to reduce a life-sustaining fat in the body known as cholesterol, which is very protective of health and life and neurological health.
Right, right, right.
And yet there is legitimate science happening out there.
What is that?
There's a new story coming out of the UK in the Mail Online that's covering a new study. They talk about addressing the norovirus, the common cold. They say, oh, there's no cure for the common cold. But now scientists are looking back to nature. They're looking back to trace minerals, trace elements. And they're finding that scientists are injecting friendly bacteria, good bacteria, with silver nanoparticles. And they're wiping out the norovirus.
Hmm.
This is happening on cruise ships everywhere, and it's the cold virus. It's very annoying, and yet they're doing this. But, you know, what's interesting is that people around the world knew this for thousands of years and have access to it. And my fear is that under Obamacare, again, under a monopoly, that they'll try to synthesize, patent, and limit the people's access to this knowledge or the utilization of this information, which is readily available within the natural products industry, for instance.
Well, this just shows that there is still hope out there.
Yes, there is absolutely still hope, as the people are questioning more and more, not less and less, as the boot, if you will, of Obamacare is just weighing down. And if the elitist, establishment Republicans aren't willing to reverse it, then, of course, the Tea Parties and those that have principles, that movement will only grow and grow and grow. As I mentioned before, interviewing Michael Steele a few weeks back, he acknowledged, too, that if the Republicans say something and they do the opposite this time, they are toast, and deservedly so.
Where can we read more?
I'd love for the Savage Nation audience to come visit me at robertscottbell.com. In fact, there's a very interesting video presentation I did at the 10th Amendment Center's Nullify Now, which talks about the vital importance of health freedom to the very life of the Republic. And I think this will add a lot to the good works you're doing here on radio, Michael.
Well, thanks for the report, Robert.
Thanks again for having me on, Michael. I really appreciate it.
That's why I wrote Trickle Up Poverty. Our security is under attack on many levels, and I document it clearly in my book.
Savage.
What I want to focus on now is Obama's war on the military and our national security. I think there's nothing more important. I mean, we can argue about many things, but frankly, I'm frightened to see what this man is doing to this country's military. And I will document everything I'm going to say. Russia is expanding its fighter forces more now than at any other time since the end of the Cold War. The Russians plan to field 300 Su fullback strike aircraft by 2022 and an additional 300 Sukhoi PAC fifth-generation fighters. Likewise, China is ramping up its purchase of additional attack jets. How, then, could any American president think it's a good idea to cut our radar-evading F-22s? Did you hear this? Did you hear this? What's more, we didn't hear a peep out of Gates and Mullen when Obama surrendered our anti-missile defense shield in Poland and the Czech Republic, or when Congress cut back on funding for future combat systems. We didn't hear a word of protest from them over the recently announced almost 20% cut in the dedicated forces they could allocate to respond to a weapon of mass destruction attack on U.S. soil. We are talking about our very survival as a nation. And yet we have a president who is intent upon weakening us so that we almost have to give up should we be confronted. I also have rules of engagement to trickle up poverty that have been published only once in the mainstream press, in the Washington Times, and people have to hear them. It's on page 264. Here's what our troops have to do. No night or surprise searches of the enemy. Villages have to be warned prior to searches. U.S. soldiers may not fire at the enemy unless the enemy is preparing to fire at them first. U.S. forces cannot engage the enemy if civilians are present. Only women can search women. Troops can fire at an insurgent if they catch him placing an IED, but not if insurgents are walking away from an area where explosives have already been laid. Can you believe this? This is astounding. The troops are frustrated. Their morale is down. What's more, if our soldiers are required to go door to door as if they're selling Avon cosmetics to warn villages of a pending search, doesn't that give the enemy time to pack their explosives and slip out the back? Why does Obama not permit nighttime searches? Are we afraid of interrupting a terrorist in the middle of his bomb making? Is it any wonder our troops are bogged down? Is it any wonder we're not making progress against an enemy who doesn't play by the same rules? Read all about this and trickle up poverty. I never go to markets. I have someone shop for me, but I reach the point where I want it because it's always wrong. If I ask for herring, it comes without juice in it. How could you eat herring without juice in it? Now, yes, why are you eating that? It's horrible. It is not horrible. Herring's a food very rich in omega-3 fatty acids. Yeah, you take the pills, but you also want to get the fish, right? So I eat herring, I eat anchovies, I eat sardines once in a while, whatever. But I happen to like herring on a bagel with tomato and avocado in the morning. I actually like that. With a cup of coffee and an orange juice. That's a typical breakfast. So I go to buy the herring, and the wait in this deli was beyond belief. First, I had to go through three non-English speakers. Now, have you tried to tell somebody from Mongolia in a white uniform with like an A&W hat on in a supermarket what herring is? Go try to explain it to someone from Mongolia. I mean, God bless her. I'm an immigrant son, but it's enough already with the English as a third language. I asked the woman, I said, where do you have herring? She gave me a look. I didn't know what you... Herring, all right, thank you. So finally someone online said, there's the herring, like an English speaker. The only English speakers in there were the customers. Oh, did I tell you the funny thing that happened in there? This, you got to hear this one. I'm in the supermarket waiting for the herring. Went on forever with the number. And I never saw a sandwich. It had five people with white hats on, six people making sandwiches. This is on a lazy Sunday. But I got to tell you something, out of town is a sort of torture. I've lived out of town so long it's become normal. But at this point, it's reaching a critical mass. Remember, I grew up in New York where one deli man in one appetizing store on Long Island could serve 43 people in about 14 minutes. He could multitask. He was cutting a tongue sandwich. He was measuring the salami. He did so many things at once, and you were out of there in 5 minutes. No one had patience. That's how I grew up. Now you got six people with the root beer hats on, and they're making a sandwich, and you, why, would you like pickles on it? Yeah, and a little mayo. And it's like glue drying. Till he makes the sandwich, my hands are clenching. The foot is in the shoe, in and out. I don't say, how can you say anything? You move faster than them. What does that make them a criminal? No. So I'm standing there. So a big Italian guy with a booming voice on him. The guy was maybe 6'7". He was an older man, but he had a voice on him. When he talked low, the room like rumbled in a supermarket. The guy was a born actor. Maybe he is. You remember some of the characters in some of the early like gangster movies? There's one guy, I wish I knew his name. Of all of the Italian character actors, this guy was the best. He was in a movie. Wait, hold it. Someone's going to pick the name up. I know I got a listener in New York who's going to know. He'll tell me, yeah, it's my brother-in-law, Sal. It was the movie Prince of the City, number one. I forget the main actor in it. Prince of the City was good at that time. Then he started playing like light in the shoe roles. Who was the guy who played in Prince of the City? I want to see if I'm even listening. The lights are a little dim right now. Who's listening? They want me to say, the mosque is no damn good. I'm telling you, end that mosque. I'm not going to do politics right now. I'm going to go back to the reminiscence and the deli. Does anyone know who the Italian actor is in Prince of the City that I'm talking about? The big guy who got into a ruckus and they threw him through a plate glass window. He was about six. Anyway, this guy was like him, 6'6", maybe 325 pounds. So he's standing in the deli. Wait a minute. He also is waiting for a sandwich. Good-natured guy. And a pockmarked face, even though you saw he had bad acne as a youth, which made him even meaner. as a kid. But now he's like an ever benevolent 65-year-old guy, doesn't bother anybody. Looks at, so he's standing there in the middle of nowhere on a Sunday, and he makes a remark, to the deli guy, but everyone heard it, with a rumbling voice, a booming rumbling voice. He says, oh, I grew up in the New York, blah, 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 a sandwich, something like that, something nice. So the deli woman says to him, just matter-of-factly, she said, well, you must have grown up in a nice Italian neighborhood. She was trying to, he says, no, not so nice. Well, everyone breaks out laughing on the deli line, which is very funny. And it went from there, some people have a natural sense of humor. He says, no, not so nice. And I don't know, one word led to the other. It was a very nice moment. The sandwich, till he got through with her, about 15 minutes till she made him his sandwich. And would you like a provolone, another, some, the machine, another one, a slice. And they pick up in the hand, they're moving the, next. It's like a bad, it's like a nightmare. It's like you died and went to like deli hell. Like, when is it sandwich? When can, and all I wanted was like a quarter of a pound of herring. I was embarrassed, by the way. So I bought other things that I didn't eat. I threw them out. I was embarrassed just to buy herring. I waited so long. In other words, I made such an investment in time for the herring, I figured I'd buy other things. I took them home. I puked from one of them. It was horrible. Why do they put fennel on salads here in San Francisco? They made a thing with, I love artichokes. They did something with cooked artichokes with some, and with fennel on it. It was so, anise. I have never tasted a spice that does not belong on food like anise. Why call that an Italian salad? The only people who ate anise or fennel in Italy were those who were starving to death under Mussolini.
Savage.